Chapter 25. Dante drove all night to get back to me. I met him out in the driveway, and he squeezed me hard, let up, then tightened his hold again. We were polite and formal with each other while he drank his coffee and assembled some funeral clothes on a wire hanger. He carried my overnight bag to the car. "You must be exhausted," I said. "I can drive." He touched my shoulder and opened the passenger side door for me. "Let me take care of you, babe. I want to do that." All the way down and out of Vermont, he kept reaching over for my hand. His hand felt heavy and numbing. I didn't consciously keep letting go, but I must have, because he kept reaching. An hour or so into the ride, he turned off the radio. "Tell me what you're thinking," he said.
"Oh, nothing much.
What I was thinking was that maybe it was a blessing Vita Marie didn't exist. That if I had allowed her to become a person, I would have failed her. I'd failed both Ma and Grandma. Most likely Dante, too. Though in ways less obvious. Things always cleared up for me once the person I loved was dead." "Nothing?" "I was just thinking what a shitty granddaughter I was to her."
"How do you mean?"
"I never visited her. She was lonesome." He explained to me why my guilt was illogical in a lecture that lasted past several turnpike exits. It was a lot less comforting than Casey Kasem had been. I asked him if I could turn the radio back on.
"I know what you need," he said.
He took his eyes off the road and reached amidst the backseat clutter for something. With no particular sense of panic, I watched our car swerve and weave toward the shoulder, a rock ledge, and then back again. What he was hunting for landed in my lap, a thick brown book with a grease-stained cover.
"Descartes?"
"Descartes. He's French. The S's are silent. What he says is directly relevant to what you're feeling. It invalidates your guilt. Read it."
"I don't want to read it."
His smile was the one I imagined him using with slow learners at school.
"Because you'd prefer to flagellate yourself?"
"Because reading in a moving car makes me puke."
"You wrote or called her every week, Dolores."
"I must have heard you tell her 100 times to take a bus up and see us."
"Yeah, because I knew she wouldn't do it," I argued. "I knew she was scared to travel by herself after that time she came up for the wedding."
I began to make a case for Grandma's fear, but lost track of my point and ended up describing that black man with his dashiki and his religion of forgiveness. How Grandma's hand had gotten tangled in his hair. How the feeling had left her with a sense of wonder. Dante took my hand again.
"Speaking of forgiveness," he said, "I'm not saying I deserve it, just that I'm applying. I need you, babe."
His words had burned me more times than they'd soothed me. I cautioned myself not to be taken in by his verbal noxema. "Why is that, Dante?" I said. "For as long as we've been together, all you've done is criticize and correct the way I pronounce things. Am I your personal dumping ground or something? Is that what you need me for?" His smile was patient.
"I was rereading Thoreau last week. Walden. It's amazing how Henry can remind you of what's sublime and what's..."
"Answer the question," I said.
"I need you because you're you," he said. "With Sheila, it was just sex. A conquest. A type of materialism, really. Pleasurable only until the muscle spasm was over. Then, boom, the same quiet desperation. I was a fool to jeopardize what we've built together. Mea culpa. Oh, mea culpa, mea fero. I made my hand a fist and snatched it away. That sounds real fancy, Dante. What about that poor girl? For you it was a muscle spasm. What was it for her? Babe, kids today are nihilists. That's what you're not understanding here. They're not like us. For one thing, they're brain dead politically. Party hardy. Nothing beyond that. And I stupidly bought into it. Temporary insanity, Dolores. Temporary. For Sheila, it was an afternoon fuck. Something to do instead of watching General Hospital. I doubt she attached anything more to it than that. So that would make your guilt illogical, too. Just like mine about my grandmother, right? Gee, Dante, this is all pretty convenient. I rolled down the window and threw his book out. He braked instinctively, then stepped on the gas again. Okay, he said. Okay, I'll allow you the extravagance of that overreaction. Gee, thanks, I said. Babe? Just remember one thing, he said. You called me for help, and I came. I'm sitting in this car next to you. I'm here. At the funeral home, I came face to face with the same smiling, bug-eyed undertaker who had slid along the walls at my mother's wake 11 years before. Seeing him ripped the scab right off Ma's death. Dante and Bug Eyes did the talking. I nodded and signed forms. Calling hours were that night from 7 to 9. Her funeral mass the next morning at 11. Would you like me to step forward at the gravesite and invite people back to the house after the burial? I looked at Dante. What do you think? He rubbed my arm. It's up to you, babe, he said. No, then. The service will be over just before lunchtime, Bug Eyes said. Okay, fine, whatever you say. Fine. Now, would you like to see the body while you're here? We received it yesterday afternoon. It's been prepared. Do me a favor, will you? I said. Stop talking about my grandmother like she's an order of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Bug Eyes told Dante there was absolutely no need to apologize, that death angered loved ones because it made them feel powerless. Everything was gray in the room where he'd put her. The rug, the wallpaper, the coffin he'd pushed me to select over the phone from Vermont. It looked like Grandma was lying in some cold twilight place. The whole room seemed covered with frost. The rosary beads they twisted and looped around her knotty hands were her everyday amber ones, not the good wine-red ones she took out of their velvet case at Easter and Christmas, the ones Grandma herself would have chosen for this occasion. Mrs. Mumphy and her daughter had gone to Grandma's house to pick out her clothes. She had on the green print dress she'd worn to our wedding. I forced my eyes up to her wax museum face. Death, or the undertaker, had relaxed her facial muscles. She was, and wasn't, Grandma. During the ride from the funeral parlor to the house on Pierce Street, I pointed lefts and rights without speaking. This one, I told him. This gray house. He eased the car into the alley, and I felt my stomach heave. It was suddenly obvious to me why I'd resisted visiting. Easterly made me, once again, who I had been. Erased all my work at Gracewood and the life I'd made in Vermont. Dante carrying my overnight bag was Daddy carrying my suitcases up the front porch steps and abandoning me. I walked behind him, with the odd sensation that Dante and I were pretend people, Barbie and Ken, and that the real Dolores, the raped fat girl, hadn't gotten away after all, was watching us from behind the curtain. Phone, Dante said, as I pushed the key into the lock. Hurry!
He ran toward its ringing. Hesitantly, I stepped inside. At first, I thought burglars had been there. My steps clattered through the nearly empty downstairs rooms. Dante's telephone voice echoing in the background. The dining room set was missing, and the mahogany china closet that had taken up half the hallway, and Grandma's cabinet model TV. Afternoon sun lit up the living room and its two remaining articles of furniture, her overstuffed maroon chair and something new, a waterbed. Disoriented, I sat down on it and waited for the swaying to subside. In her very last letter, Grandma had mentioned something about a church tag sale and a truck coming to take away some of her old things, but I hadn't pictured this full-scale emptiness. Cars passing by outside vibrated the walls. Dante's steps thundered into the room. "That was the lawyer," he said. "She wants to touch down with us while we're here. I set it up for 9 tomorrow morning. If people are coming back here, we'll have to get food ready. Call back and cancel. She says it'll take less than half an hour. We can squeeze it all in. Didn't I see a deli across the street? There must be a bakery around here, right? I don't imagine there'll be a cast of thousands coming." He sat down next to me on the bed. We rose and fell, rose and fell, with the shifting water. "Why did she buy this bed?" I said. "I don't get it." "Maybe it was for her back or something. By the way, I like this place. Spartan. It's got definite possibilities." "It used to be more cluttered," I said. "She must have known she was going to die." He flopped backward. "What do we have? About 3.5, 4 hours before the wake? Maybe I'll take a nap. I'm beat." He reached up and started massaging the small of my back. "You okay?" I looked back at his smile. "Thank you for helping," I said. "Driving me down and everything." "You don't have to thank me, babe. I'm your husband." "I'm not sleeping with you tonight," I said. The massaging stopped. "Okay, fine. I can be patient. We have all the time in the world. Only, I think if we're going to ever..." "I'll be upstairs," I said. "Take your nap." Ma's bedroom had blank, bald walls, empty bureau drawers, empty closets. Anger rose in me, filled me up. What harm would it have done to let her stuff wait up here until I was ready to claim it? The emptiness was a betrayal, a slap in the face. "God damn it, Grandma," I said. She had left my old room intact. Console television, green plaid bedspread, chair by the window. I'd sat up here for 6 years, looking angrily out at life and trying to eat away pain. I saw it clearly now. Why Ma had fought so hard for me to go to college. Had let my awful words bloody her up during those battles about my going off to school. Ma had understood the danger of Grandma's house. How heavy furniture and drapes drawn on the world could absorb a person until she was freakish and mean and trapped. Ma had wanted college to set me free. However badly I'd messed up down in Pennsylvania, going there had launched me, had gotten me away. I saw my mother standing there, steak knife in hand after she'd cut the cord on my TV. Ma, a warrior of love. I walked over to the bureau. Holding my breath, I pulled out the bottom bureau drawer and removed the folded sheets. "I love Bernice Holland. Sincerely, Alan Ladd," it still said. Happy, relieved, I sat down on the bed and cried. The truth was, Grandma had given me enough time to get down here and claim what I wanted. I imagined her struggling down the stairs with those heavy cartons, defying her bad heart because she'd needed to get her business in order. She'd had a right to empty rooms. She had loved me the way she could. I slid the bolt and opened the door to the landing, walking the 6 stairs to the 3rd-floor apartment. Grandma had kept it locked and vacant since the afternoon Jack and Rita snuck away. Like a graveyard shift policeman, I checked the knob, then walked back down. If Dante was sleeping soundly, I decided, I'd write a note and go to the funeral parlor myself. The people at the wake would be the same white-haired St. Anthony's women who knew what a mess I'd made of myself, who'd sat at Ma's wake and watched me scream Daddy out of my life for good. That funeral parlor room was the last place I'd seen him. Dante thought my father was dead. He hadn't fallen asleep. I found him at the bottom of the stairs, studying the photograph of Ma and Geneva, teenagers in their white dresses. "They're beautiful," he said. "Who are they?" "One of them's my mother." He pointed to Geneva, and I shook my head. "Oh, right," he nodded. "Now I see the resemblance. You have her beauty." "Yeah, sure," I said. "You do. You just don't see it." He leaned the back of his head against the wall so that it looked like he was balancing family pictures on each of his shoulders. "I don't know if you've given it any thought yet, Dolores, but I imagine this house is yours now. Any idea what you're going to do with it?" "Get rid of it," I said. "I don't want it." "I thought having a house was your dream. Not this house." He wrapped an arm around me and kissed my forehead. He'd touched me more in the past 6 hours than he had in 6 months. "I love you, Dolores," he whispered, kissing my neck, my ear. "Then there's my job," I said. "Could you please stop doing that?" He let go and walked up 2 more stairs, looking at more pictures. "Here's what I was thinking," he said. "Maybe we could start over again down here. This could be exactly the chance we need. I could get another teaching job. There's nothing on my record." "What about me?" He reached down and traced my eyebrow with his thumb. "Every grocery store in the world needs clerks, babe." I sat on a stair, looking down at Grandma's front door. Late afternoon sun was coming through the oval of glass, creating an oblong patch of light on the hallway runner. "Did you marry me because of the abortion?" I said. "Were you just being noble?" "I married you because I loved you. Love you. Present tense. How can you love me if you think of me as just some stupid checkout girl?" "You're not stupid. You're unfettered. Want to hear a secret?" I didn't want to. It might make my own secrets start coming out. Make the fat girl throw open her bedroom door and start blurting. "The truth is," he continued, "I envy you sometimes. I wish I could shed some of my own complexity. It's like a heavy weight I carry around, a burden. Your simplicity is, well, it's Thoreau-like, which is why you're so good for me." "What's that supposed to mean?" "You keep me in touch. You keep me honest." "You're not honest," I said. "You told me you hadn't done what they accused you of, and I believed you. Then you brought her home and did it with her in our bed. Having nothing on your record is a lie." He bent his head down against his knees and rubbed the back of his neck. Then he straightened up again and lifted our wedding picture off the wall. He looked at it while he spoke.
Believe me, Dolores, you're not accusing me of anything I haven't accused myself of. If anything, you're being easier on me than I'm being on myself. Yeah, right, I said. He came up to where I was sitting and squeezed next to me on the stair. He closed his eyes and kissed the picture. Love us, he said. He sat there and watched me cry. I didn't want to touch what was in the refrigerator. The perishables were too close to Grandma. Food she would have bought only days ago. While Dante was out running, blowing off negative energy, as he put it, I heated up canned food in the old familiar pans. All my Vermont letters to her were in the phone book drawer, held together by a rubber band. I kept looking up from my handwriting. The Cinderella accounts I'd given her of my marriage. Afraid I'd see her watching me from the doorway, peeking at me the way she used to after the rape. If there was some sort of all-knowing afterlife, then Grandma knew by now that those letters were lies, that Dante and I had nothing like the life I'd invented for her, for myself. In a way, I deserved Dante's dishonesty. Dolores Price, the biggest fat liar on earth. I feel 100% better, Dante said when he burst back inside in a swirl of cool air. His face was flushed and healthy, covered with a glaze of sweat. He looked almost trustworthy. We stood up each time pairs and trios of church women struggled up from the casket kneeler and hobbled over to shake our hands. Honestly, she looked so good at bingo 2 weeks ago. When I picked up the paper that morning and read it. This fella of yours is a doll, ain't he? My husband's people were from Vermont. Rutland. They sat in their chairs, visiting with each other, occasionally smiling at Dante and me. They spoke loudly for the ones who were hard of hearing. No one said anything mean. No one gave me away. Near the end, I looked away from a whispered conversation with Dante and saw, at the coffin, a small man in a belted trench coat. His plaid fedora sat on the kneeler next to him while he prayed. Then he made the sign of the cross and walked over toward us. Dante and I stood up. "I'm Dante Davis, and this is my wife Dolores," Dante said, extending his hand. "We appreciate your coming. Dolores is Mrs. Holland's granddaughter." "Dolores," the man said. "How are you?" He'd shrunk some and had given up wearing the toupee. It was his worried brown eyes I recognized. "Oh, my God," I said. "Mr. Pucci." I hugged him harder than I should have. His bones felt as light as a bird's. He examined me at arm's length. "You look wonderful," he said. I brushed away the idea. "How's school?" "Oh, it's still there," he said, smiling. "I'm sorry about your grandmother. I'll miss her Christmas card this year."
"What Christmas card?"
"Oh, she sent me one faithfully every year since you graduated. Kept me posted on your various activities." He smiled at Dante. "Vermont's a beautiful state. A friend of mine and I drive up for the foliage every year."
"Gary?" I said. "Do you and Gary still live together?"
Mr. Pucci blushed and nodded. His lover's face came back to me, and their apartment, the guilty way Mr. Pucci had looked that afternoon I'd gone over without calling.
"Yes, well..."
Mr. Pucci shook Dante's hand and told me again how sorry he was. I watched his exit into the foyer.
"Former teacher?"
Dante asked. "Excuse me," I said. Bug Eyes was holding open the door for him. "Mr. Poochie, wait," I said. "I'll walk you to your car." We talked for 5 minutes about nothing. It was the sound of his car engine that scared me enough to begin. "I'm sorry if I embarrassed you in there about Gary just now."
"No, no, don't be silly.
He was so sweet to me that day I showed up at your apartment. God, what nerve of me to barge over there like that. He played me Billie Holiday records before you got there. Do you still have your jukebox?" He nodded. "Mr. Poochie, the thing is, through this whole wake, I've been sitting in there watching Grandma on one side of the room and her church friends on the other side, wanting to apologize to someone, except I couldn't. Dante doesn't even know about. What I'm trying to say is, it means a lot to me that you came tonight and that you were my friend, my pal, when I was so messed up. I'm just so sorry that..."
"Let me ask you something, pal," he said.
"Where were you the afternoon President Kennedy got shot?"
I was at St. Anthony's. Miss Lily stopped a spelling test to tell us.
"And I was at my mother's kitchen table with my cousin Dominic when it happened. Eating lunch, pasta e fagioli."
I stood there looking at him, waiting for it to make sense.
"And where were you when you saw Neil Armstrong land on the moon?"
"You know where. With you. Sitting on the couch at Grandma's. It was the night after Ma got killed. You brought me an African violet."
"That's right," he said. "That's exactly right. So whenever anyone mentions the Kennedy assassination, I think of my cousin Dominic. And whenever anyone talks about that moon landing, I think of you. You and I are locked together for life, kiddo. It's fate. Not a damn thing either of us can do about it. Apology accepted."
Then he drove away. Dante slept that night on the waterbed. Upstairs in Grandma's room, I closed the door and got into my nightgown. Popes and saints covered the walls. The statues of Jesus and John the Baptist seemed to stare back. In her top dresser drawer were a small vial of holy water, handkerchiefs, nitroglycerin for her heart. In the back, I found an envelope with childhood pictures of me. No pictures from my fat days. Grandma hadn't wanted evidence either. Her good red rosary beads were in their velvet case. Without warning, a moment I'd shared with Grandma came back so powerfully and unexpectedly that it hurt me behind the eyes. It was right after she'd found out about the rape. Ma was at work, and I was home from school. The shades were drawn against the sun. Grandma put on the table light and said she wanted to show me something about her rosary beads, her special ones.
"They've got a little secret," she said. "I use it when things are bad."
She slid up the back of the hollow metal crucifix and brought my hand up to it. When she tipped the cross, a tiny rust-colored nugget fell out and into my palm.
"What is it?" I asked. "A pebble from the road Jesus walked when they crucified him. You just put it between your fingers and play with it. Roll it back and forth, like this. Makes you feel better. I'll leave the beads here for you for a couple of days, in case you want to say the rosary or feel the pebble, on account of that business, what he did to you."
I'd gone out of my way not to pick them up. Then a few days later, they were gone again. My memory always insisted that Grandma had been remote and unforgiving about me and Jack. But there, back again without warning, was that moment. I listened for Dante, then got up and locked the door anyway. I sat back on the bed and, with my fingernail, pushed open the back of the crucifix. It was there, that pebble, the hard red nugget. The estate should take about 9 months to get through probate, the lawyer said. It's pretty cut and dried. Your wife is sole heir. She was someone I remembered from high school, Penny something, a popular kid. Now she had a hyphenated name and a puffed-out baseball glove of a face. There was a baby in a frame on her desk. She had no recognition that I was the fat girl at the back table in her English class. The Pierce Street property and a smallish bank account, that's basically it. How small is smallish? Dante laughed. The night before I dreamt I was swimming in ocean water as warm as a bath. Grandma, Ma, Vida Marie, and me. The water was jade green. Breathing was optional. Honey, Dante said.
I'm sorry, what?
Mrs. Marks Chapman just asked if we were planning to sell the property or occupy it ourselves.
You mean the house? Move there?
Uh-huh. No, sell it. Dante put his hand on my knee. Well, he smiled. It's still up in the air at this point. We haven't made a definite decision just yet.
Not totally definite, I told her. Pretty definite.
Let me ask you something, Mrs. Marks Chapman, he said.
Please, she said. Penny.
Penny. Would it be possible for us to live there at the house temporarily, while it's still hung up in probate?
Sure, that can be arranged.
They both took sips of their coffee.
Good, Dante said, smiling at me.
Great.
Connie Superette had gas pumps now and called itself Quick Stop Food Express. Inside the store, the ceiling sagged the same way and the air still smelled damp and garlicky. Connie had been replaced at the register by a teenage girl in tight jeans and a glitter front sweater. There was a coffee and microwave center, where the Pizzix and I had roughed each other up that day I'd called Stacia a dirty DP. I recognized Big Boy's whistling before I recognized the rest of him. His hair had turned yellowy-gray, and he'd grown himself a Grover Cleveland body. Dante ordered a pound each of provolone cheese, boiled ham, and roast beef. I looked away when Big Boy sliced the beef. Don't forget about the bakery, I said. Old ladies are sugar addicts. On the walk back, we passed Roberta's forbidden tattoo parlor. The storefront glass had been painted over with black paint, but the peacock sign, faded and chipped, still hung over the door. This woman, named Roberta Yaskevich, used to live there, I said. She gave tattoos and sold hand-painted girly neckties. One time, my grandmother saw me over there, and she...
Shut up, shut up, shut up, Dante said. He locked his eyes closed and stood frozen on the sidewalk. I waited.
What?
I said. When he opened his eyes again, a poem was just beginning to form itself in my head. The idea was embryonic, and now I've lost it. Thanks a lot. For Grandma's sake, I tried to stay with the funeral mass, but my mind kept wandering away from Father Duptolsky's ritual, drifting in a patternless way. Touches and sounds were what came to me. The bristly feel of Ma's neck after she came home from the state hospital with her close-cropped haircut. The pattern of creaks Grandma's footsteps made on the stairs when she went up to bed nights. The gurgle and hum of that suction machine at the abortion clinic. And now we offer one another a sign of peace, asking God to remember the soul of Thelma, one of his faithfully departed, who has rejoined him in the kingdom of heaven. The old lady's hands came at me from behind.
Peace be with you, we all said, shaking on it like a deal. Peace be with you. At the cemetery, a warm Indian summer breeze blew against my face. The pallbearers, Dante, Mrs. Mumphy's son and sons-in-law, and two old men from the Knights of Columbus, carried Grandma's coffin from the purring hearse to the platform above her grave. 12 old people had ridden out to the cemetery. I counted them, like Grandma would have done. When Father Deptolsky was through, Bug-Eye stepped forward and cleared his throat. Mr. and Mrs. Davis would like to invite everyone back to Mrs. Holland's home at 262 Pier Street for a luncheon buffet. For a second, I didn't realize he was talking about Dante and me. When everyone else headed back to their cars, I stood alone and broke a red carnation off the spray that covered her coffin, kissed it, and put it back. The limousine rolled smoothly and slowly over the cemetery grass. I rested my head against Dante's shoulder. Mrs. Mumphy and three other ladies came back to the house. I sat them in a row on the waterbed. Thelma never told us she was a hippie, one of them laughed. God rest her soul. They murmured amongst themselves out front while Dante and I peeled cold cuts off the stack and arranged them on a plate. Get that coffee pot going and put those blueberry squares out on this thing, I whispered. We should have had all this stuff ready. I hate this. My plan was to keep him busy out in the kitchen in case one of them started reminiscing about me, exposing my secrets. I can't tell you how profound it was, the feeling of my hand inside those gray silk pallbearer's gloves, he said. His eyes were closed again. He'd stopped working. I think I've got to write about it now or I'll lose it. The hell you will, I hissed. You stay here and help. But he was already headed for the foyer. If you ladies will excuse me, I heard him say. In that big bare front room, there was no place to put the plates of food but on the floor. The ladies didn't seem to mind. They fed like sharks. I was right about them loving desserts the best. You didn't ring up people's groceries for years without learning about human nature. I thought they'd leave after they stopped eating, but they just sat there, talking about people I didn't even know. A plump little woman, Edna, reached past me and took the very last blueberry crumb square, the one I was planning to reward myself with after they left. She bit into it and asked me if Dante and I had any children yet. Well, no, I said. Female trouble? Nodding seemed like the easiest way out. Well, it was probably all that weight you piled on a while back. My sister-in-law was a heavyset woman, big boned. She and my poor brother tried and tried. The weight raises the dickens with your female system. She took pictures of her grandchildren out of her purse and told me their names and ages. Now these two are in the talented and gifted program at their school, she said. The older one's doing sixth grade arithmetic, and he's only in the third grade. They're cute, I said, in a hamsterish kind of way. Beg your pardon, she said. The other ladies halted their conversations to listen. I said they're cute. By the way, you've got some blueberries stuck on your front tooth. At their request, I hoisted them all off the bed and got the coats. At the sink, I did the dishes and cried at how touchy and mean I'd been to those old ladies. I should have made potato salad. If only Dante had stayed downstairs and done the talking. He'd locked himself in Grandma's bedroom for over an hour. I went up the stairs, hesitated, then knocked. Not now, he called out. Downstairs there was a thumping on the front porch, the doorbell. Her face looked as brown and wrinkled as a walnut shell, and the black wig didn't quite fit her skull. Remember me? She said.
Roberta! Oh, my God!
Figured I'd wait and pay my respects after all the old biddies left, she said. Holy Christ, look at you! I swung the door open wide. An aluminum walker had done the thumping. She hoisted it up the step to the foyer floor. She was wearing a lavender jogging suit and red canvas sneakers. She clunked her way into the living room, aimed her rear toward Grandma's big chair, and free fell backwards with a sigh. "So how you been?" she said. "Where's the ashtray?" The walker sat in front of her like a cage. With her shaky hand, she lit a cigarette. I offered to make her a sandwich.
"Well, all right," she said. "Just cheese, though. I'm a vegetarian."
"The baby rat in the can of beef stew, right?"
"That's right," she said. "So anyways, I'm sorry about Thelma. Her and I never had much use for each other, but to tell you the truth, I think we admired each other's crust."
Then she told me a dirty joke about a man cursed with a 3-foot penis. In that bawdy, open-mouthed laugh, you could hear every cigarette she'd ever smoked. The provolone sandwiches I'd made us tasted uncommonly good. "I'm one now, too," I said.
"One what?"
"A vegetarian."
"Good for you. Meat clogs the blood vessels to your brain. Makes you think better if you don't eat it. I read it somewheres. So let me give you a piece of advice, Dolores. Don't ever get Parkinson's disease. Had the shakes for over 4 years now, like dancing all day without a partner."
She laughed at herself. So I laughed, too.
"And these migraines. If I don't eat right, man, oh boy. You know what I told the doc? I said, 'Listen, money bucks, I'll get rid of old man Parkinson, and you and me can get lovey-dovey. Got any beer to go with these?'"
I shook my head. "I can go across to the store and get some."
"That's okay. The doc ain't exactly wild about my drinking beer with the pills I'm on, so..."
"Anyways, about your grandmother. You remember that blizzard last year? The big one?" I nodded. "We didn't get it as bad as you did."
"Yeah, well, she called me on the telephone that night to see if I needed anything. Wouldn't give me the time of day for all these years. And then she calls me up during that snowstorm. Says she's sitting there watching the backyard fill up with snow, and she wonders if I need anything."
Roberta laughed.
"Two crusty broads. That's what we both were. That's how we both made it. You got any matches around? My cigarette lighter's running out. All's I'm getting is a spark." "Yep. She and I both had a tough row to hoe, Thelma and me. But we both shut up and hoed it. Hey, how'd you lose all that weight, anyways? You were a 2-ton tilly for a while there."
I heard Dante walking above our heads. From the top of the stairs, he called to me to please keep it down. He was at a crucial place.
"Who's that?" Roberta asked.
"My husband, Dante."
"Lighten up, sweetie," she called up to him. "Come down and join the party. Life's too short."
She stuffed the rest of her first sandwich into her mouth. Her cheeks bulged out as she chewed and talked.
"Other day, Dial-A-Ride brought a bunch of us down to Kmart. This is funny. Listen to this. I was the first one done with my shopping. See, all I was getting was a new oven mitt and some Polydent. I go along mostly for the company, you know, just to get out. The doc always tells me, 'Roberta, you keep your mobility.' He means keep moving around. You sit around feeling sorry for yourself and you're dead. Sitting on your ass can get to be a disease worse than what you got. Where was I?"
"Dial-A-Ride," I said.
"Oh, yeah, right. So I got my stuff, and the girl at the register puts these other things in my bag, too. Little free samples, gum and a comb and a marker pen. So I says to her, 'Look, girlie, I got false teeth and I wear a wig.' So she fishes back in my bag and takes out the comb and the gum. Left the pen in there. Anyways, I went back to the van, even though I knew it was locked. Figured I could just wait and have a smoke.
He can't smoke inside the van, see? So while I'm waiting there, minding my own business, this car pulls into the handicap space right next to us. Brand new car, white and clean. And it's got this bumper sticker on it that says, "Life is a shit sandwich." Isn't that stupid? So this guy gets out, good-looking fella in his 20s. I say to him, "Hey, handsome, tell me something." He takes a look at my walker and gets all panicky. "I'm just running in for 2 seconds," he says. See, he thinks I'm going to yell at him for parking in a handicap space, but I ain't. I don't give a rat's ass about that, you see. I'd rather walk the extra 10 feet than be called handicapped. Where was I? She amazed me. "Life's a shit sandwich," I said. "Oh, yeah, right." So that guy goes running into the store, and here's what I did. I fished that free pen out of the bag and marched right over there to that bumper of his, got myself right down on the ground, and I wrote. Just after the "life's a shit sandwich" part, I wrote, "But only if you're a shithead." Course, then I couldn't get myself back up again. Had to yell over to a couple of kids at the phone booth to come pick me back up. They got all excited, thought somebody had run me over. She paused for a drag on her cigarette. "Life's a shit sandwich, my ass. Life's a polka, and don't you forget it," she said. I felt better than I'd felt in weeks. You were asking before how I lost the weight. Before I could stop myself, I was explaining about college and Gracewood and my technique of imagining mold. "You're the first one I ever told all this to," I said. "Including him," I pointed toward the ceiling. She stared at me without laughing. "Well," she said, "if I was you, I'd tell the whole goddamned world. Write one of them diet books. Make yourself a couple of $1 million. By the time Dante came downstairs, the air was thick with smoke, and Roberta and I had each had 2 of the beers I'd run across to the Superette and bought. I was barefoot and sloshing around on the waterbed, smoking the 3rd cigarette I'd bummed. Roberta and Dante took turns sizing each other up. I watched his eyes dart with alarm from her walker to the red sneakers to the ashtray she'd filled. "I was just telling your wife how I got my show at the radio station. I do the Sunday morning polka hour. So anyways, Dolores, the station manager comes to the phone and I says to him, 'Listen, hon, you got all these happy-go-lucky polkas, and in between them, that announcer guy sounds like you dug him up at the cemetery or something.' So this station manager guy's a real smart-ass over the phone. He says to me, 'Oh, well, why don't you go to broadcast school and then send us an audition tape? Show us how it's done.' So that's what I did. Called his bluff. Except I didn't send any tape. I brought myself down there live and made that station manager sit and listen. Comes to find out, I gave him a tattoo once, a tiger lily right on his hairy ass. Both of us remembered each other. So now I'm the polka princess every Sunday morning from 10 to 11. That was my idea to call myself that, the polka princess. Just like, what's her name? Lady Diane over there in England. I tell you, hon, put that microphone in front of me and I throw a party." When I got back from walking her across the street, Dante was spraying the air with Glade. "I give up," he said. "What was that?" "Roberta Yaskevich, the lady who ran the tattoo parlor." He held up her lipstick-smeared glass and said he hoped to Christ that whatever she had wasn't contagious. "Yeah, life's just a big shit sandwich, isn't it, Dante?" I said. He sighed. "If you're angry because I didn't help you entertain those old women, I'm sorry, but I couldn't help it. I know it's hard for you to understand, but the poetic impulse is fragile." He went out to the kitchen and came back with the packages of uneaten cold cuts and one of Roberta's and my beers. "You see," he said, "it started with the feel of my hand inside the gray pallbearer's glove. That was the inspiration, the inception of the whole thing. It's hard to explain. Intellectually, I was trying to make it an elegy. At least, that's what I would have predicted it would become, except it wasn't feeling elegiac. It was feeling, well, sexual. Isn't that odd? He tilted his head back and dropped whole slices of boiled ham into his mouth, chewing as he talked. Then, sitting up there amidst all your grandmother's Catholic trappings, the most intimate thing happened. The force was undeniable. Any of those pumpernickel rolls left? You see, I'd been blocked for the first hour or so because I was missing the point. It was the feel of the gloves, not their symbolic quality, that interested me, the sensual aspect. So finally I said, okay, fuck it, Davis. Fuck all these plaster saints looking at you. I let the poem swerve toward the erotic, gave it that permission, and I was freed. Freed? Yes. Amidst all those saints and martyrs, with all those dried-up talking vaginas downstairs, the dynamic was incredible. It just overtook me, to the point where, in the middle of the writing, I stood up, pulled down my pants, and masturbated myself to orgasm. It wasn't a choice. It was an act of survival. Hold on a minute. The poem is rough still, but I want you to hear it. He ran up the stairs and back down again. Okay, listen. The solitary pallbearer shoots his seed, his liquid sex into the night air, a trajectory, while icons, saints, bear their blank-eyed Catholic witness. You were doing that while I was down here with Grandma's friends? He smiled proudly. It's still very rough, I know, but the components are all there. This house is alive to me. I feel the most incredible psychic energy here. It's radioactive, poetically. I have to be back day after tomorrow, I said. I'm working days at the store through November. That night I locked the door to Grandma's room and lay back on her bed, rolling the rusty pebble between my thumb and finger. I'd found his stain on the rug near the foot of Grandma's bed. I'd gotten a washcloth and rubbed the spot clean, harder and longer than was necessary. "Where are we?" I asked, waking up. Dante had insisted on driving. We were parked at a Burger King off the interstate. "Holyoke, Mass. Could you order? I've got to take a leak." "What do you want?" "I don't know. Whopper with cheese, large fries, vanilla shake." I approached the stainless steel counter reluctantly. Fast food cashiers had so little patience with the indecisive. "Welcome to Burger King. We flame broil, not fry. Can I help you?" A freckly strawberry blonde teenage girl, like Sheila, who I'd been thinking about before I'd fallen asleep. I repeated Dante's order, and she punched her cash register keys. "Is that it?" "And a cup of tea, I guess." "Cream and sugar, ma'am?" "Well, whatever. Okay, yes, please." "585, ma'am." It was mid-afternoon, an off hour. There were empty booths all around us. As Dante approached, I saw the path our life was making. One continuous etch-a-sketch line, looping back and forth through gray. He took his hamburger out of the box, bit a large crescent shape out of it, and chewed. I looked away. "I've been thinking," he said. "Our apartment lease is up in less than 3 months. What do you say we move down to your grandmother's house?" "I've been thinking, too," I said. "In a way, you raped her."
"What?"
"Your high school girlfriend,
Sheila.
You raped her." He looked around to see if anyone was listening. Then he put down his Whopper.
"How do you figure that?"
"You took advantage of her."
"Oh, right," he laughed. "When she orchestrated the whole thing, calling me 3 or 4 times a day, walking right into the apartment without even knocking?"
"You're 30, and she's, what, 17?
You raped her by being almost twice her age. He took a sip of his shake, staring at me.
I hope you know you've got it all wrong, he said.
I tried to tell you before. Kids today aren't innocent.
If anything, the little cunt raped us, my career, you and me. Not that this is the appropriate place to go into any of this.
I dangled and dangled my tea bag. You know what's funny? I said. That I stayed a vegetarian and you didn't?
What the fuck does that have to do with anything?
At first, I didn't eat meat just to please you. I thought it was what you wanted, so I did it. Now it makes me sick to even think about eating it. As a matter of fact, I'm getting this little pukey feeling just watching you with that hamburger. It's like the feeling I used to get at the mental hospital when I imagined mold growing all over my food. I used to weigh over 250 pounds. He let go a nervous, bewildered laugh.
Is this just some random kind of mind-fucking, or am I supposed to be following your train of thought?
The abortion is what made me a true vegetarian, I said.
Oh, Jesus.
Every bite you take, it's like you're eating her up. Which is what we did, in a way, Dante. First we made her, then we ate her up.
All right, that's enough, he said. Shut up.
Here's something else I never told you. I got raped when I was 13, I said, by my grandmother's tenant. He lived upstairs.
A worker pushed a broom past us.
The silence lasted so long that I began to wonder if I'd said it out loud or just thought I had. I never painted any watercolors either. It was Etch-a-Sketch pictures I did, copies of masterpieces. I was pretty good at it, actually. But I saw through your eyes that it was tacky, so I shut up about it. Oh, and my father isn't dead. He lives in New Jersey, I think, same as your parents. You just assumed he was dead, so I let you. You and he are a lot alike in some ways. That never even really occurred to me until that New Year's Day you slapped me and then, wham! It was like, Dolores, how could you have missed it, you know? But anyway, I used to do the Etch-a-Sketches when I lived at this halfway house after I got out of Gracewood. That was a mental hospital. I was there for years. He swallowed hard. He wouldn't look at me. When I went into the hospital, I weighed 263 pounds. A real mess. This is how unhappy I was back then, just before my breakdown. I took this taxi from Pennsylvania to Cape Cod. To be honest with you, I was trying to kill myself. See, I was all confused. I had just had sex with this woman who, well, that's a whole other story. Anyway, on the way there, we stopped at this donut place. I sat there in the back seat of that cab and ate 8 or 9 lemon-filled donuts in a row, crying all the way, but still eating them. That's how bad I was. He looked at me, a quick, scared glimpse. "Stop it," he said. I couldn't stop. I felt wonderful. As free as Ma's flying leg. You see, Dante, people don't fall so neatly into the categories you put them in. Heroes and villains, unfettered and what?
Fettered?
In some ways, Dante, you're the one who's uncomplicated.
Look, if this is some sort of sick joke, you're...
My roommate at college was Kippy Strednicki.
What?
Kippy. Your old girlfriend from high school. I used to steal the letters you sent her, then lock myself in the bathroom and read them. He sat there, staring and blinking, dumb-faced as Gomer Pyle. That was when you were going to be a Lutheran minister, remember? I was so surprised that first night we met in the driveway at Mrs. Wing's. Well, not surprised we met. I planned out that whole part. I mean, I was surprised when you said you didn't believe in God anymore. You seem so religious in those letters. The way you used to torture over whether or not you and Kippy should do it before you got married. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I don't mean to smile. But do you see what I mean? About Sheila? People don't know anything when they're 17 or 18 years old. Back then you thought God was in heaven getting ready to hurl a thunderbolt at you if you and Kippy had sex. It's funny in a way, isn't it? Funny peculiar, I mean. How you were so uptight and moral back then. The boy who promised his mother he wouldn't be a womanizer, remember that? You just shouldn't make promises you don't intend to keep, Dante. Love, honor, and cherish. Ha! He wouldn't stop blinking up at the ceiling. We've been married almost 4 years, and in all that time... You knew Kippy? Remember the time you sent her those Polaroid pictures you took of yourself naked? On your bed, in your dorm room, out there in Minnesota. He curled his fist around his uneaten order of French fries and squeezed. His face turned a kind of purple color. What was she doing? Passing them around so everyone could have a good laugh? It wasn't like that. She never even got them. I didn't think she deserved you, so I kept them from her. Thought I was protecting you. I looked around us. The restaurant was starting to fill up. I used to steal your letters before she got back from her 12 o'clock class. See, they put the mail out at lunchtime, and I always got it first because I never went to my classes. I only lasted one semester. Well, less than that. The funny thing was, whenever I looked at those pictures, all the time I was at the hospital and everything, all I could ever see was this poor, sensitive, vulnerable boy. That's who I thought I was marrying down at the Lobster Pot. Someone vulnerable like me. That's who I kept waiting for to show up. I just had this incredible blind spot. I was like Helen Keller when it came to you. He slammed his uneaten food into the bag and twisted the neck. Shut the fuck up, he said. Don't say one more fucking word. It wasn't until last night that I put the whole thing together. That foolish... Whatever it is, that epic thing you're writing, that's what finally helped me figure it out. Freed me, like you put it. Freed you to do what? Crack up in the middle of Burger King? To see what I should have seen before. I kept waiting for you to turn back into the person you were in your letters, in those pictures. I guess you were right. I was pretty stupid, at least in that way. I mean... Letting all those high school girls stroke your ego and calling it teaching. Wanting us to move to Rhode Island so you could stay in the house all day and jerk off in front of my grandmother's holy statues. Even way back then. Even posing yourself for those Polaroid pictures. It's all just been masturbating, hasn't it, Dante? I can't believe those pictures. You violated me. Oh, I know I did. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying I'm proud I stole your letters. I've always felt awful about doing that. See, that's what you don't get about Sheila. How you violated her with your pleasant muscle spasm business. I mean, what it amounted to was you just jerking off into her. And me too. Which is why you didn't even want to consider having a baby, right? You're like that guy in the myth. The one who fell in love with his own reflection. What's his name, Dante? You know, all that kind of stuff. But anyway, this is what it feels like to get violated. What you're feeling now. It's awful, isn't it? I mean, it makes you feel so powerless. For a second, I thought he was going to hit me. But I couldn't stop. I propelled myself in some way that felt both scary and right. Those pictures of you are back at our apartment in a shoebox marked important papers or something, in the bedroom closet, top shelf. You can have them back now if you want. I'm through with them. Oh, but I do want something else in there. A painting. Well, part of a painting, actually. This little zigzaggy square of canvas. It's something my mother, his fist, sent our food and packaging flying. Why are you fucking with my head like this? He shouted. The couple next to us looked over, open-mouthed. I'm not fucking with your head, I said. I've been doing it all these years, but now I'm not anymore. You see, I thought keeping secrets was the only way I could get you, keep you. All these years, I kept wanting to tell you the truth. It just wouldn't come out. It was just like Dr. Shaw warned me. He was my shrink at Gracewood. He told me when I quit that I still had issues left to... You cunt, he screamed. Hey, someone yelled over. You want to watch your language?
You want your jaw wired? Dante shot back. The manager scurried over to our booth, a paunchy man with wide sideburns and a paper hat. In my nervousness, he struck me funny. Hi, folks, he said. I smiled. Hello. Anything I can help you with here? Anything I can get you? Dante turned to him. Yeah. You can get out of my way, asswipe. He stood up and shoved the manager back against a booth. Out in the parking lot, he opened and slammed the car door shut 5 or 6 times, then got in and sped away. We all watched him through the plate glass. I helped the manager back onto his feet, straightened his hat for him. As a matter of fact, I said, you can get me something. What's that, ma'am? A ride to Rhode Island?